The views and opinions expressed during the drive time are those of Dave Glover and his guests and are not those of Northumberland 89.7. Agree, disagree, or have a comment? Call the station and speak with Dave live on the air. Call 905-372-2321. That's 905-372-2321. Now your host, Dave Glover.
Alrighty, welcome back to the broadcast. Now it's time for us to ask you, the listeners, to consider this. And today we're asking you to consider, who are you voting for? Who are you putting your ballot with? Joining us in the studio is your Liberal candidate for Northumberland Peterborough South, Lou Rinaldi. We're going to be talking to him about his bio, his background, why he decided to run again for re-election here in the riding of Northumberland Peterborough South, a brand new riding, a brand new opportunity for him to provide services and to provide the coverage that, let's face it, the job, that's the job description, right? He's there to represent the people of this riding. Before we get to that, though, here is one of my favorite songs. Ontario, a place to stand, a place to grow, a place to get to know your neighbors. This is the economic engine of this country. Welcome to the studio, Lou Rinaldi. Glad to have you in here today.
Good to be here. It's a beautiful day. We should be doing this outside.
We should be, but unfortunately I have respiratory disease and it would just kill me. Thankfully, we have air conditioning in the studio. Rob, welcome back. Haven't seen you since I had to step away.
It's good to see you back, Dave.
Very glad to be here. Glad our first interview is with my good friend Lou Rinaldi, though.
Indeed, indeed. And you know, Lou, what a great place to start, because I'd like you to introduce yourself to, you know, and they're just, I don't know how this is possible, but there may not be people who know who you are. So tell us a bit about yourself and about what you do.
So how many hours do we have?
Just the 1 hour.
Just the 1 hour. Okay. Yeah. Anyways, look, first of all, let me say this for people that don't know me. A little bit of my personal background, I think it's important. I'm an immigrant. I came to Canada when I was 12 years old with my mother, sister, and father. And it didn't take long to become a Canadian. Still very proud of my roots, but I am a Canadian. married for 48 years, four kids, all with their own families now, nine grandkids. Mm-hmm. I told them to stop having kids. I couldn't afford Christmas anymore, and I think they listened. I've been a small business owner all my life. I mean, I graduated from high school, part year college. It wasn't my thing back then, like many other folks, I think, of my vintage. And I started my political career as a counselor in the former Brighton Township. It doesn't exist anymore. It amalgamated with the town of Brighton to make the municipality. One of the council members passed away, and my name was pulled out of the hat, and that's a real story. Mm-hmm. And from there, it's just something, the passion that I've had to get involved in the community in a deeper sense. I served about 9 years in Brighton Township Council, from councillor to reeve of the day. And then I ran for mayor of the newly amalgamated municipality of Brighton, which included the town of Brighton and the township of Brighton. Mm-hmm. So name wasn't an issue. And I became the first mayor of the municipality of Brighton. Then in 2003, or just prior to that, the leader of the official opposition of the day, Mr. McGinty, approached me if I would be interested in running provincially. Never had an interest in the past. I never had met Mr. McGinty and his team. And I said I would if I could serve my almost complete my 3 years as mayor, because I wasn't going to walk out halfway through my term as mayor. It so happened that I served 3 years minus 1 month. Here I am. I guess I got elected in 2003, re-elected in 2007. I lost by about 400 votes in 2011. And then I stayed engaged with the party, working for both premiers, or volunteering for both premiers. And then, lo and behold, I got re-elected in 2014. And I enjoy what I do every day, working with communities at large, working with industry, working with Chamber of Commerce's. Healthcare has been a big issue. I mean, up to now I have three hospitals in my riding. Not two ridings have three hospitals. So that's been a full-time commitment to make sure that those hospitals stayed healthy. And frankly, I think we're there, but we always need to do more. So I'm looking forward to June the 7th. I hope people turn out to vote. Obviously, in the biased way, I hope they choose me to vote for. It's my name on the ballot, as I go door to door every day. And that's a sort of an abbreviated.
So let's talk about door to door. What are you finding when you're going and talking to people on their doorstep?
So I'm going to be honest with you, Rob. Some nights I go home. By the way, my wife hates politics, but she supports what I do. Thank God.
But you wouldn't know it if you met her, though.
Yeah, that's right. Some days it's feel confusing because I guess I've become a bit of a geek of the media, so every morning when I get up, through electronic means, I scan all sorts of media. And some of the polls and some of the stuff that I hear, and then I go out knocking on doors, it's quite different. I must say, now, I can't say it's like that across the province.
But in what way is it different?
It's different that, I meet the odd mad person that's angry at me at the Liberal Party, frankly, mad at the Premier. And that's happened every election. I'm going to be honest with you, it's a little bit more intense this time for mm-hmm. whatever reason. But that's a small number compared to the people who say, well, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're running again. The challenge I heard today is a lot of folks already voted for me. That's why I got at the door, because he advanced polls. Mm-hmm. And of course, so what people at the door, talk to me about is about their, in many cases, their personal issues. There's some global issues, yes, about our budgets, about some of the larger programs, but they want to talk about what's important to them each and every day. So when I talk to seniors, and I've done quite a bit of that, when I talk to them about our plan to have a $400, up to $400 for a single person, $750 for a couple, for dental work. They never heard that before. No deductible for medicine, the seniors. All they need is a prescription and a health card. So when they go to the pharmacy, start January 1st, there's no deductibles, no co-payment. Mm-hmm. There's no dispensing fee. They like the idea, the part that if they're still living at home and they're one of the household members is over 75, they'll qualify up to $750 to shovel their walkway, clean their windows, cut their grass. So for seniors, that's what I talk about. And God love them. There's an awful lot of seniors in this riding.
Well, and something else, because this is something that is sort of based on a United Kingdom model, because right now if you are a home care provider,
yes.
If you're someone who stays at home with a family member who's not well, for instance, you had to just suffer the financial blow of that. In the UK, they have been providing funding for home care providers, people who are in your family, and now that is something
that's what we're doing here. Yeah. The same with people with disabilities. They'll qualify up to $5,000 a year, outright cash to provide to pay for their own providers, because not every disabled person is quite the same.
But one of the things I've noticed over the last 18 months, we for a long time here in Northumberland, it was pretty lean years for the hospital. There was a lot of talk about cutbacks, and funding was always an issue, and there was cuts. And, you know, it's beyond the fat. We were into the meat, down to the bone.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen in the last 18 months more monies flow through. So base funding has gone up. We've seen 6 new hospice beds. We're going to see 29 long-term care beds. We saw the public health unit budget went up by 3%. That's fantastic, but it comes right before an election. Are we going to face another time of we languish and it's going to be another election before you're going to come back and start handing out money again?
So a two-pronged answer to that. One, I take a bit of exception. I'm going to be honest. When people say, why all this just now? Well, mm-hmm. We've been doing this all along. I mean, full-day JK, free tuition for kids post-secondary.
We're talking about healthcare, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying this. So, with healthcare, Community Health Center in Coburg, 3 family health teams in this riding that were never there before. They didn't start yesterday, but we've been improving them. The hospital in Trenton was determined to be closed. Not only is it staying open, but now they have they're going to be building a health hub. So it's things have progressed. My second prong to that, I don't belong to the I didn't belong to the finance committee at Queen's Park, but I volunteered 3 days of my time to travel the province. I went to Ottawa, Sudbury, and Kitchener-Waterloo to do pre-budget consultations, and that's an all-party committee.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't part of the committee, but I wanted to see outside my riding what the atmosphere like in other parts of the province. So when you look at our budget, which the budget is really our platform in broad sense,
mm-hmm.
It's things that people had asked for during this consultation process. We need to do better on mental health. We need to do better with hospitals. We need to do something to bring doctors to areas where there's a shortage of doctors, mostly mm-hmm. rural and northern. So we package those programs, and those programs are rolling out. So why now? I think we heard loud and clear. Yes, and I mean, look, I said from the outset, I mean, I used to tell Minister Hoskin, the Minister of Health, I have to be the luckiest person in Queen's Park. They have 3 hospitals in my riding. That kept me really busy. Mm-hmm. So it does take time sometimes, and I thank the hospital, the staff, and the boards for working with me to make sure we achieved what they needed.
We hear a lot about hallway medicine, and you can go into the emergency some nights, and you wait a long, long time to get looked after. And it gets backed up, and we see the hospital also releases press releases that say, you've got to find alternatives because we're just backed up here. What are we going to see if you're elected that's going to change that? Because that obviously is something that's very real to people.
So I think, to be honest with you, I think the proof is in the pudding. What I've been able to do up now to make sure that those hospitals stay healthy, to make sure that the Community Health Center in Coburg, which, by the way, is expanding to in Port Hope, it's going to be expanding to Coburg as well to provide some service as well.
Okay. On that, we're going to come back with more on that particular topic when we come back, because, again, Rob's point and question, which is something that's been raised by a lot of people out there, is, you know, it just seems like right now it's happening, and it just seems like it's happening because of an election. So we'll be right back with more of our interview with Lou Rinaldi, your candidate for Northumberland Peterborough South Liberal Party. We'll be right back.
I'm Chef Michelle.
I'm Chef Michael.
You don't have to be a chef to savor the flavors of Chef's Corner.
Tune in Thursday mornings at 10 to see who we've cooked up for our special guests, and don't forget our skill tasting giveaway.
Join Chef's Corner to tap into the upcoming culinary season and stir the gourmet in you. It's all about food, eating in season, and keeping it local. Chef's Corner, Thursday mornings at 10 a.m.
Here on Northumberland 89.7.
Truly local radio.
Hi, I'm Teresa.
And I'm Heather.
We own All Creatures Great and Small,
your natural pet care specialists.
You've probably noticed that raw food for pets is everywhere now.
We're not surprised.
We've been feeding raw and educating about the benefits for the last 18 years.
To ensure your pets are getting a balanced raw food diet
with the supplementation they need,
come see us. We've got the knowledge
and the experience. All Creatures Great and Small, your raw food experts, 7 days a week in downtown Coburg.
And don't forget, like us on Facebook.
They are the reigning North American brass band champions. The Globe and Mail called a recent performance spine-tingling. The Toronto Star said their playing was poignant and captivating. Friends of Music presents the Western Silver Band in a joyous program devoted to the music of the British Isles. That's 3 p.m. Sunday, June 3rd at Trinity United Church in Coburg. Tickets online at friendsofmusicontario.ca and at the Victoria Hall box office.
Why not come out and enjoy a fabulous movie-going experience at the Rainbow Cinemas?
Play now through May the 31st, Solo, a Star Wars story rated PG, no free passes accepted. Deadpool 2, rated 18A, no free passes accepted Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. And Book Club, rated PG.
Rainbow Cinemas are in the Northumberland Mall, 1111 Elgin Street West in Coburg. For showtimes, call 905-372-2444. Or visit rainbowcinemas.ca.
If you enjoy hearing a vast variety of music and thought-provoking talk, you've come to the right place. We're Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
All righty, welcome back. In the studio with us is Lou Rinaldi, your member, former member of provincial parliament. I keep saying member. He's the incumbent candidate for the Liberal Party of Ontario. He is your representative here for the Liberals for Northumberland, Peterborough South. We've been talking about health care. Now, in the last little while, we have seen in the news from the Ontario doctors basically saying that the Kathleen Wynne government hasn't really been working with them, that there's been sort of this pushback. And so I have to ask, I mean, if that is that a mitigating factor in terms of getting doctors to service rural Ontario?
Look, we have some of the best doctors anywhere by no means. I mean, the reality, we've been negotiating with doctors. I mean, it's a number of issues. And you know that we had an agreement. The board of directors of OMA approved, then that the membership at large didn't support it. Then they had some internal strifes with their own structure. Then now they have a different structure. They wanted to go to mediation, and they're into that process as we speak. But we got to remember, doctors are independent business people.
That's right.
You know, just like, a grocery store, like, a gas station, they are, but they're paid by the province.
But we have other parties that are promising us that they're going to end hallway medicine. Then we have other parties that are saying they'll bring more doctors to our area. We've had candidates in here we've interviewed, and they talk about this. What are you going to do to bring more doctors to our area?
So part of our 18-19 budget that was just passed about a month ago, Queen's Park, there's a provision that if we form government, there's going to be some incentives for doctors to finish their internacy in hospitals, mm-hmm. teaching hospitals. And the commitment from the government will be, although we don't have the final numbers yet, it'll be that in order for doctors to qualify for that incentive as they finish their schooling, they have to serve in underserviced area, which majority of rural Ontario and northern Ontario. So that's an approach that we're certainly using. I mean, the other piece that it's, I don't think we're taking advantage more. You know, telemedicine, it's come a long way. I think I told stories in the studio, Dave, while my wife has some issues with her back. she hasn't seen personally her specialist at Women's College Hospital face to face, but she goes to the family health team in Brighton or the community health center in Trenton, because that's where we live, and she has a consult every 3 or 4 weeks, and you know, they give her a new prescription, she does whatever testing. So in some cases, we're still medicine is delivered sort of the old-fashioned way. The other thing is family doctors, in special, not all of them, they don't have the large practice that once used to have. I remember my old doctor in Trenton had over 3,000 patients. My new doctors in Brighton, there's two doctors that are working together in a family health team. I believe they have 1,200 patients. So our goal right now, to answer your question, we are going to have an incentive to at least for underserved area, because those issues are not prevalent in large urban centers like Toronto, Ottawa. They don't have a doctor shortage.
We hear about pilot projects, though, where paramedics are working with nurses, and paramedics are going to people's houses to check up on them on a regular basis, people who frequently call in and are seniors, and they're sort of being proactive. Where's the innovation, though? Where in your party is innovative programs like that being introduced and rolled out across the system?
So, for example, you know, nurse practitioners have gained a huge role in delivering medicine. The family health team in Brighton has a nurse practitioner that's got 500 patients of her own under the auspice of a doctor. And she only had to use the expertise of a doctor once last year. So given, you know, those responsibility, druggists have a lot more responsibilities today, you know, when they dispense drugs or even for consultation. So that's the type of things we're trying to do. We have, from 2003 to 2017, we have 6,000 additional doctors in Ontario. So that crop of doctor is growing, but we're delivering medicine. For example, go back to seniors. I mean, we don't hear much about it, but if a senior is still at home and has issues going out, doctors will get paid extra to make house calls.
All righty. Well, on that note, we do have a caller online, so go ahead.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hey. Yeah, I wanted to ask Lou a question here.
Yeah, go ahead.
I haven't seen him since I almost ran him over in the Olympus Burger parking lot.
Oh, that's a good thing.
Listen, I wanted to ask you about, we got an issue in Port Hope now with long-term care facilities. You're probably familiar with the old hospital.
Yep.
Tear it down, don't tear it down.
Yep.
You know, three more beds, this type of thing. What concerns me most, and even more than the three beds, is how do we get more facilities, given that, you know, our population is getting old, and by 2020 the rules all change, so some of these places are going to be closing down. They're not going to be up to standards. Is the Ontario government planning on building any long-term care facilities in our area?
Yep.
Or are they planning on making retrofitting these old ones easier, or what's the story there?
So the retrofitting has begun about 5, 6, 8 years ago. So I forget now the number of beds that have been retrofitted to meet today's standards. And that's an ongoing process. As far as new beds, you probably have heard that Northumberland County Golden Plow Lodge is redeveloping the whole building a whole new building, and they just got approval for an additional 29 beds, which will bring them to up to over 180, I believe. I could be off of it. And just announced a 100-bed facility in Havelock. I think it's 35 beds in Norwood. And that's part of the first 5,000 wave of new beds by 2022. So we're committed 5,000 new beds by 2022. And 15,000 within the next 10 years. As a matter of fact, just before the election was called, I started working with one of the homes here in West Northumberland for an additional build, and plus rebuilding, you know, one of the one unit that he has. That's so he wasn't ready for the first wave of commitments, but he's certainly working, and him and I chatted to some extent that he's ready to put an application in for some new additional beds in West Northumberland. At this stage, I cannot reveal the proponent.
Yeah, whether it's Port Hope or not.
Well,
we don't know.
Well, you know what? I mean, let's be realistic. I mean, does it really matter whether it's Port Hope or Cobourg or vice versa? I mean, I know we want to keep people closer to our homes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, that's a given. I mean, I have a mother on long-term care with dementia, and I know what it's like. I mean, she's north of Toronto. I don't see her that much. So I know you want to be as close as you can, but she's close to my sister. So when I look at those things, I mean, to be fair, I don't look at those lines that draw Cobourg or Port Hope or Cobourg to, you know, Cramie or Haldimand-Hollenbeck. I think if it provides service to the community, you know, that's what I want to spend my time on.
So is your concern then, Ed, that because of the new designation for the hospital, that the proposed plan that was already in the works is going to just go the way of the buggy whip, and then the people of Port Hope are going to be left with?
Well, you know, I mean, there's accusations going back and forth on this hospital thing here, so mm-hmm. it's pretty hard to determine exactly what is going on. The company says that if they don't get their way, they're going to close. They're going to move out, and they're going to take the two that are existing with them,
exactly,
because they can't make.
So, Ed, I just want—I don't mean to interrupt. On the part of the—and I'm going to be honest as I can be, because not that I'm deeply involved, or I was deeply involved, but certainly it got brought into this picture. So, it's easy for the proponent to say that they're just going to lock the doors and move it, whatever. Well, those facilities are majority funded by our tax dollars. So before they will get approval to do any such thing, it's not that easy.
That's an interesting point.
So it's not that, you know, like, yeah, for example, your shop, well, I don't like, you know, the road in front of this place, I'm going to move, you know, two blocks over. It's not, I can guarantee you it's not that easy. So it's not something. The other piece, I mean, you know, the municipality designated those, you know, those buildings of some significance, and that's the power the municipality has. I mean, so we try not to interfere, because local council know those things best, what's best for their community.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Ed.
Yep, bye-bye.
Okay.
All righty. Well, and again, you know, long-term care facilities, and you just mentioned, I think this is probably the first anyone's hearing about this new one that's going in Havelock, which is good news. And I guess the point really is, we are in a position now where we can expect to see these things rolled out. And the only concern really is, you know, is this simply a matter of a re-election? And if another party gets elected, does that mean that those facilities are dead in the water?
Well, I mean, so that's what's in that. Those numbers were in the last two budgets, not all of them, but in different times, for long-term care beds, because the redevelopment started about 4 years ago, frankly. So it's something that's ongoing. So a very good question that gets asked to me, I'm going to say every day. So if you don't form government, will that change X, Y, Z? Well, things that are in our budget that were approved, they're on target to be built, whoever, or carried on, whoever, the party, if they want to. There's nothing to stop a new government to make new rules as they go. And I'm going to use an example to illustrate that. When we first got elected in 2003, or our party got elected, Premier Ernie Eves, prior to the election, made a commitment that they were going to give credits to religious and private schools. So if you send your son or daughter to a private school, religious school, you'll get a tax credit. We campaigned, I remember doing that, we campaigned against that. So that was already some put in place by the former Conservative government. I believe it was the first action of our new government is to pass legislation to repeal that. So new government could repeal whatever they want.
One of the things I also would like to talk about, because I know healthcare is important, but we should talk maybe about jobs and about poverty. And one of the things that has happened over the last year has been a real diminishment of affordable housing in our area. It's become very, very critical. We lost Transition House, which was a major emergency shelter. The only 24-hour shelter we have is the lobby of a police station. What is your government going to do to help alleviate this aspect of housing to help these homeless people in Northumberland?
So that is an issue. I think there's a number of things that on that front that we're trying to use a number of tools. One, as you know, we lost the federal government when it comes to support of housing. The former government, federal government, so everything was left on the lap of provincial government and local municipality. In this case, would be the county. So there was a lot of uncertainty, and not much happened for probably a good 7-10 years. I'd be the first one to admit it. Now the federal government is back in the housing piece. We've just signed an agreement just before the House adjourned with their federal counterparts of $600 million federally, and we committed to match it provincially. And the negotiation with service delivery agencies, in our case is the county, they're happening as we speak to see how can we best use. The other piece to that, and I think we've seen some evidence, although it's very premature, some of the things we've done when it comes to, for example, increase the minimum wage, that it's going to help somebody that may be dependent totally on social housing. Now maybe they can afford something of their own, and I think it's going to get better next year. Some of the changes that we made in the way we deliver some social assistance to the needy. The reality is that we've taken a lot of the restriction away. So if somebody on social assistance has a job, they don't get clawed back like they used to.
But in your budget, you're only offering people on Ontario Works and ODSP a 3% increase. Yeah. And when you look at the cost of, like, go shop for groceries, it's going up faster than 3%. So how is that helping anybody?
It's 3% for 3 years, so it's 9%, 3% a year. So, but the end.
But again,
it's not enough. I agree. Yeah. I agree with that. So, so some of those. I'm not sure if you noticed an article in the Toronto Star, the person that, and I forget his name now, that runs the food bank in Toronto. Mm-hmm. That they had the decline in people visiting the food bank in the Toronto area, mm-hmm. and these were his words, not mine, not our government. Words that some of the shifts that the province has done, whether it's minimum wage, some incentives, to not take away some of the clawback, some of the money that they earn aside, all contributed to that. And I thought it was a substantial number. Now, I know it's very short. I think your government, though, won't
make a commitment to basic income? Because the minimum wage, and we go back and forth on this, but why not make a full commitment to basic income?
So we have three pilot projects.
Yeah, I know that, but why won't you make a permanent commitment to basic income across the province?
But you know as well as I do, there's a lot of jurisdiction where they use different forms of basic income, and they weren't all successful. This is why we used Expert to give us a plan, and the plan is we're doing a three-year pilot project. That way, if government of the day decides to go that direction, at least has some good data back up. What should we do? Should it be $17,000 a year? Should it be $20,000 a year? Should it be, based on size of family, whatever the number may be? Those are questions that have been asked, and that's why the three pilot project in very strategic area that represent different phases of the province, we're going ahead. It's not quite a year yet, but we're, preliminary reports prior to the House adjourning, we're getting some real, real good feedback.
Well, but going back to the issue then of affordability and housing, I mean, there is basically 0% vacancy. I mean, they're saying it's what, 0.3% or something ridiculous.
That's right.
Like that? It's essentially zero in terms of vacancy. So, I mean, what do we tell people that are struggling, that are stuck in, for instance, maybe they're living in a place that is a dump, that maybe it's got mold, but it's the only place they can afford. How do we tell people in that situation that, you know, don't worry, we've given you a minimum wage increase, you'll be able to find a better place, when there isn't a better place. I mean, it really does come down to the fact that for too long, almost 25 years in this province, let's face it, the provincial government and the feds, and even in a lot of cases, the municipalities themselves, have sort of abrogated that responsibility to social housing and home security to the private sector. And the private sector, which is a for-profit driven model, will say, well, you know, if we can get $1,200 a month for a place that really should be renting for $8, then we're going to charge $1,200 a month. I mean, I know that the province has brought in regulation now with regards to rental increases and things along those lines, but by the same token, it hasn't helped with the diminished stock in terms of housing. I mean, really what we need in the province of Ontario is social housing. We either need need the province to go back to the old plan, which was buying vacant homes and turning those into subsidized housing, what they used to call scatter homes in the province of Ontario, or building housing projects. Now, again, there are negatives and there are positives. If you build a housing project, then, you know, if it's only populated by people of low income and a certain income level and a certain mindset, then, you know, you've got to worry about the destruction of those public properties. If you do a mixed-use residential thing, then you got to, I mean, there's so many things, but it doesn't seem to me right now that any of those balls are in the air. So I'm going to let you think about that. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more of our conversation with your Liberal candidate, Lou Rinaldi, as we ask you, the listeners, to consider this.
Hey, Northumberland, Jumpin' Jody here, inviting you to join me for the Saturday Morning Confusion, heard every Saturday from 9 till noon. I'll be playing the best music of the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and don't miss my segment of Things That Make You Go Hmm. That's Saturday Morning Confusion, 9 to 12, right here on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
It's Saturday Morning Confusion. If you think you can sleep, it's illusion.
Hi, I'm Teresa.
And I'm Heather.
We own Spark Toys in downtown Cobourg.
The coolest little toy shop in town.
We've been open for 5 years now.
And are pleased to offer you a great selection of quality toys.
Books, puzzles, games, art supplies, puppets.
Our clients love that shopping at Spark is fun.
And easy.
Our amazing staff offer personal shopping.
With gifts that are wrapped and ready to go.
Making you look like a rock star at every event. Spark, smart toys for cool kids. 7 days a week in downtown Cobourg.
And don't forget, like us on Facebook.
In keeping with the Indigenous Protocol, CFWN-FM, Northumberland 89.7, acknowledges that we are broadcasting from the traditional territory of the Mississauga Nation and the Alderville First Nation.
Moving Forward is a local owner-operated company that offers support to people who struggle with clutter and those who need assistance downsizing and relocating. We offer a full range of services. No detail is too small for our attention. To learn more, visit our website at moving-forward.ca or call Debbie at 289-251-3395 to book a free consultation.
News and views on the political scene locally and elsewhere. It's The Drive Time with Dave Glover on Northumberland 89.7.
And welcome back. Our guest in the studio is Lou Rinaldi, your Liberal candidate for Northumberland Peterborough South. Rob Washburn, of course, here, professor of e-journalism. We ask you, the listeners, to consider this. Before the break, we were talking about housing, the lack of affordable housing here in the county. And again, this isn't just a Cobourg problem. This is a problem in Brighton. It's a problem in Cramie. It's a problem in Grafton. It's a problem everywhere in this riding. I mean, the reality is, you know, we have a free market economy. And if the landlord thinks he can get $1,200 for that $800 apartment, he's going to ask for $1,200.
So, I mean, we did put some measures in place, and I mean, they're fairly recent. For example, we extended rent control to include everything now.
That's right.
It doesn't matter when it was built. It doesn't matter whether it's a granny suite in the basement of your house. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter whether it's a flat on top of your house. So the inclusionary zoning, it's a tool the municipalities can have when they're negotiating, you know, new development communities, whether it's an apartment building or to make sure that there could be a mix of housing.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a tool that they never had before. So some of those within the last year have been put on place. I mean, the reality is government left it to the free market, as you mentioned a minute ago. Unfortunately, free market is more interested in building expensive condos and those kind of things that, mm-hmm. you know, you and I can't afford to rent, even if they are, some units are for rent by private owners.
So one of the things, though, that we hear about often, and I know Bob Sanderson, the mayor of Port Hope, has argued for this, and the Coburg mayor has argued for this, is the vacant buildings that we see down in the downtown. They get tax breaks to do this. Is your government going to do something to end that practice? Because I know that there's no incentive for them to, say, for example, create affordable housing up above and have a store below. There's nothing for them to do. Are you going to change that if you're elected?
So if, you know, we're working through this housing crisis, and I know it's not new, same as we made some initial steps. I would say to you right now that if I'm fortunate enough to be back on June the 8th, it's something that it's certainly something I think we need to investigate to to some extent, because
something you mentioned during the break was even finding office space for yourself
for my campaign, because landlords don't want to rent it for a month because then it takes them off that tax bracket, and then they have to go through a bunch of hoops to get back to the lower tax bracket. So, the commitment that I would make, Rob and Dave, is that certainly this is another plank that we need to look at, and I'd be more than happy to do that.
Well, the other parties have made a great deal of talking about taxing corporations or not taxing corporations. The Conservatives have talked about tax cuts for corporations. The NDP, one of the ways that they're going to finance their platform is through higher taxes to business. But you have nothing that talks about taxing corporations. Why is that? Why aren't you seeking that kind of revenue?
So our corporate tax rate is, that we've have today. It's very competitive with other provinces and some other jurisdictions. So, we also, Ontario is the leader in the economic development world. We're one of the most sought out jurisdictions for companies to invest, and we want to retain that because, frankly, south of the border, they have way more incentives to attract new business or expand. So, we want to be fair. And I think our, we didn't increase or decrease our corporate tax, except the one for small businesses, because we want to make sure we're competitive with the rest of our trading partners.
Sure, but are we being fair to the taxpayers of Ontario, though? Because, one of the concerns we have in Ontario right now is that, and you hear this all the time, is that we have one of the largest, if not the largest, subnational
debt.
Okay, and a lot of that has to do with the fact that tax rates are low. We've got large corporations. There are companies in this province that don't pay any taxes. They bring in a lot of revenue. So what we see then is their employees, because their employees are paying their tax shares and their suppliers are paying their tax shares, but the companies themselves, the big multinationals, if you will, aren't paying a tax. And the reason for it is because, we don't want to drive those jobs out of the country. But what that tells me as an Ontarian is that the province is more than willing to let employees subsidize their own jobs. And is that really a business model that's sustainable?
Well, you certainly make a great point, Dave, and it's something that for the economic climate that we have today, it's a policy decision that our government has made. To find that balance, and to be fair, I think the balance in Ontario is it's working really, really well. One of the lowest unemployment rates we've ever had. Mm-hmm. When we increased the minimum wage, the sky was going to fall in. I see more job wanted ads in business windows than I've ever seen before. That's becoming, I'm going to admit it, I met with a number of business folks just this morning. And their number one concern was, we can't find people to employ.
Right.
I was in Kitchener-Waterloo just before Christmas. There were 2,500 high-tech jobs empty, unfilled. So that's becoming a bit. And Rob, you will know this, that, for example, Loyalist College and some of the industries around the area, they're there ready to create programs to assist those companies with training. So we're asking, the province has been asking colleges mostly, because they're the handier one to get to the root of the cause, to come up with just-in-time programs to assist, to train people so that industries could be more, have access to some labor force.
Okay, well, we're going to talk a little more about that topic when we come back. You're listening to The Drive Time, Canada's only holistic political chat. This is Wednesday. We're asking the listeners to consider this. Today, we're asking you to consider Lou Rinaldi.
your Liberal Party candidate for Northumberland, Peterborough South. We'll be right back after this break.
Coming soon to Northumberland 89.7, it's the return of Tradio with me, Jordan Appleman. Tune in at 1:15. If you have something you're looking to sell, trade, or just give away, you'll want to call in and let us know all about it at 905-372-2321. Or if you have a yard sale or a garage sale happening, you can tell us all about that too, and we'll tell everyone. You can check out our Facebook group, Northumberland 89.7 Tradio Buy and Sell. Radio on Northumberland 89.7, truly local radio.
Hi, I'm Teresa.
And I'm Heather.
We own All Creatures Great and Small,
your natural pet care specialists.
We have to tell you about a product we introduced a year ago.
CBD oil. Our clients are telling us it has changed their lives.
Arthritis, insomnia, anxiety, chronic pain.
These are just some of the issues that people and pets are addressing.
It's safe, effective, Canadian made.
And there's no THC, so you don't need a prescription.
All Creatures Great and Small. We're your local source for quality CBD, 7 days a week in downtown Cobourg.
And don't forget, like us on Facebook.
The Port Hope and District Chamber of Commerce has a safe and affordable group tour of India scheduled for departure on September 24th. Visit the historic Taj Mahal, shop in exotic markets, and sample homemade Indian cuisine. For more information, contact the Chamber office at 905-885-5519 or visit porthopechamber.com.
If you have an upcoming event, we'd like to help spread the word. Send your information to info@northumberland897.ca.
All righty, welcome back. Our guest in the studio is Lou Rinaldi, your Liberal candidate for Northumberland, Peterborough South. As we ask you, the listeners, to consider this. Now, we've been talking about jobs, training. Now, Rob, you're a professor of e-journalism. You're a professor at Loyalist College. The one question I'm sure you hear from your students all the time is, okay, I've got a degree, I've graduated. Where the hell are the jobs?
So I ask you, Lou, where the hell are the jobs?
No, Dave asked you that.
No, question. I know, but I don't have an answer to that. I mean, seriously, our students do get jobs, yeah. and they do quite well. But
well, you just said there's lots of people out there looking for skilled workers. Are they just not? Are we just not graduating workers in the right fields? I mean, what is it? How are we? How is this disconnect that we always hear? How does this disconnect continue?
I mean, that's a good question. I mean, having a job for 30, 40 years, it's a day of the past. I mean, that just not here this year. I mean, my advice that I give to young people when I go to speak to them at grade 12, grade 10, and some grade 5s is education, because the education piece will help you do those transitions from job to job to job. I mean, I think it's very pivotal. We're trying to adjust. I mean, Loyalists also got, I'm threatening the name that of a program. As a matter of fact, the province committed $800,000 where they bring folks that are frankly unemployed and get them ready for the job market. They've been doing that for a couple of years now, very, very successful. And they've been working with some, a blast freezer in Trenton for some of their meat processing. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to look at things more hands-on to fulfill some of those specific jobs.
So I'm going to shift gears because we haven't got a lot of time. I got one thing I really wanted to get to, and that was the sale of Hydro One a good decision now that you can look back?
Well, was it a good decision overall? I think it was. Did we approach it the right way? And then saying, when I say we as a government, maybe there should have been some more thought. But at the end of the day, the $9 billion that the province was able to achieve through those shares, $5 billion went through to pay down the debt that actually the former conservative government, because when they tried to deregulate Hydro One, you remember it was one industry, the other $4 billion, it's strictly done by legislation. It cannot be used for anything else, for infrastructure. So we just leveraged some assets that we had paid, and repurposed them for other projects that
we
needed.
Have you done enough to lower people's electrical bills?
So one of the things that when I said before, maybe we should have done it somewhat different. So. Before Hydro One was put in an auction block, selling shares, there had to be an enormous amount of rebuilding. Like, Ontario Hydro was built 60, 70 years ago, and I'm talking about transmission lines. And through no fault in any particular government, they all fell short. the reality to keeping that system well working. So $50 billion had to be spent.
But you have to know that this is one issue that has really hammered you guys. Is there are people's hydro bills, and business complains about it. Residents complain about it. Have you done enough for them? Because I don't see anything in your platform that's going to help, and yet two other parties are glad to give greater breaks to residents.
But how are they going to pay for them? That's what we haven't heard from the other parties. I mean, we they can say all they want to say, but how are they going to pay? So we extended the payment for that $50 billion infrastructure though over a longer period of time, just like your mortgage. I mean, I don't know about you, but my first couple of houses, I had to go back and remortgage after I bought them because, either my businesses weren't doing what they're supposed to. So all we did and we did lower hydro bills. I can tell you, my house is all electric. I was suffering the pain. There wasn't 1 week of caucus that I would not speak about my hydro bill at home. So my hydro bill has gone down about 40%. And in general, they come down at least 25%.
Mm-hmm. Well, Lou, one of the questions that really has been coming to my mind of late is there going to be a surprise on election day? I mean, right now it looks like Andrea Horvath could be the next premier. It looks like Doug Ford. Although today he released his final plank apparently, and there's no financing. There's no actual numbers, so we don't know what's going to happen there. I mean, are you thinking that maybe there's a, I mean, look at what happened in the U.S. Everyone, 91% Hillary Clinton was going to win it. It was a cakewalk. She got blown out of the water by Donald Trump. Why? Because people that were being polled refused to say whether or not they were going to support Donald Trump. Are there people in Ontario right now? We've got 31% in a recent poll undecided. Are we going to see a massive shift? Or are there going to be a bunch of people, do you think, on election day that are going to go, you know what? I've looked at the numbers, and Kathleen Wynne really is the one to go with. I
mean, so are we going to see? We don't have to go to the U.S. We can look right here at home. So 2015 election, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau was in third place a week before that vote. He was in third place, and they were talking about coalition with the NDP and what were they going to do. In 2014, the last provincial election, the best anybody could do was a minority government. And we weren't expected to win. My own polling in this riding, I wasn't supposed to win. We formed government, a majority, a substantial majority. Mm-hmm. There's only one poll that counts, and that's Election Day. I could speculate all we want. For me, it's about the people that elected me for the last 12 years that I served. And that's the people that I concentrate on during campaign. And this is not new this time. It's been like this every election. So I've been going out door to door. I can tell you what's really the bar that gone up the most in the last 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. Anybody but Doug Ford. Now, where they're going, these people are saying that to me, where they're going to park their vote, I'm not sure.
Are you concerned they may not vote at all?
Well, actually, I was talking to two households today that I think I convinced them one to go and vote, and I don't know what they're going to vote for. But some of them said, I'm not going to vote.
Okay, so this is me asking the listeners out there. I want to thank you, Lou. Thanks for your time this afternoon. Thanks to all of the candidates who provided us with time to speak with you on behalf of the voters here in Northumberland, Peterborough South. And look, a reminder that this is an important election. This isn't just about, filling a seat. This is about either we move forward, continuing down a path, or slightly variance, or we move backwards. I, for one, don't want to move backwards. Here's Madman's Angel, Green Hills of Northumberland.
I've seen the city lights, they shine so bright, you lose all sense of time. I've wandered ancient lands with castles grand just to see what I could find. But never have I found such peace, no matter where I roam, as in the green hills of Northumberland, the place that I call home. The way the waves fall on the sandy beach, the boardwalk full of smiles, the shades of green along the countryside, the hills go on for miles. And everyone you come upon will smile and say good day. You're in the green hills of Northumberland, and you're gonna wanna stay. The market bustling with artist wares, and the farmers bring the best. The smell of fresh baked bread flows through the air, and I'm feeling truly blessed. And the music flows throughout the land like nowhere that I've known. Through the green hills of Northumberland, the place that is my home. Shine so bright, you lose all sense of time. I've wandered ancient lands with castles grand just to see what I could find. But never have I found such peace, no matter where I roam, as in the green hills of Northumberland, the place that I call home. Oh, the green hills of Northumberland, the place that I call home.